The Mishnah on Sofir Zion on the book.
This guy is the Mishnah.
The chain, when we say the chain, we're getting back now to some of the issues that we had before about one property that's built on top of the other property. Until now we were talking about residential property. Now we're talking about agricultural property. So the chain is the abad shuhubanui b'tzema. Medina asat al-gabal. Here we have a very interesting case in which a person has a winery that he's built into the ground. He has like a cistern where he stores the wine, and the wine runs into a cistern which he's hollowed out on the side of a mountain. On top of this, however, somebody else is gina. Now what happens here is that the roof collapses and the gina collapses into his cistern. And this is very much the same situation, which we have an upper story and a lower story. In this case, the upper story is a garden, so to speak. So here too, Hare Ba'al Hagina Yored Vizorei Alamata, the guy who had his garden on top can simply plant in what was previously that person's rishus for his Beit Abad in the ground that has now collapsed into that area until such time as the man will come back in and repair it. Achiyah said, with Beit Abado, Kipin, until he makes a dome over his cistern, in which case the upper person's garden will be supported by the dome. And by the way, there's a little bit of a question here, which is the relationship of the chiyuv of the person on the bottom to provide for the payment of the roof of the guy above. I mean, there's a little machlokas we've shown him about the situation that we had in the residential property in the case of collapse. However, over here, there's no question whatsoever, you see, because the person on the bottom cannot claim, I'm perfectly happy not having a roof. In the other case, you can claim I'm perfectly happy not having a ceiling, because I do have a roof, the roof above your head. So as far as I'm concerned, if we just take away the ceiling, I'll have a very nice roof, so you can get out of here. But over here, he can't say, I don't need a roof, because he can't have his cistern. It's going to be open to the air. He has to rebuild the roof. So therefore, it's understood that that area is his responsibility. Now, if something... Here we're going off a little bit on a tangent. We'll get back to our tradition. But here the question is this. In cases of collapse, we've been talking about what about people between themselves, whether it's a renter or whether there's two owners. We haven't spoken about what is the responsibility of the people who own these things after something falls into a shisharab. Who's responsible then if somebody's hurt? So if you have a wall or a tree that falls into Rosh Hashanah without any indication beforehand that it was going to fall, so what happened was the result of some type of natural, an act of God. There was a storm, an unusual storm, blew things over and so on, or lightning, anything like that. So there, if they were mazik, patur milishalim, the people that owned it would be patur because he's considered to be an owner. However, in a case where he had a court order that he was supposed to get rid of this thing, where it was noticeable that there was a problem, and they had sent out pakachim and said, you've got 30 days to clear up this, and this is before it fell. So it was a violation, but they condemned it. So then, if it was not called the tochazman, if either of these things collapsed during the time, he's still considered to be an honest, and therefore he's proper. But once it passed the time that he had, then he can't claim that he was an honest, even though he was, because he was supposed to get rid of it before the event happened that caused it to fall. Now suppose, instead of falling into a shuter abim, it falls into a next door neighbor's garden. The Omar lo today avanecha. The guy says to him, "Will you get your stones out of my garden?" The Omar lo, and he says to him, "Higiyuka, why? Don't you keep them yourself? You can get them out of the garden on your own. It's fine." In shon inlo, if the guy doesn't want them, then he can't force him to leave it. Though he can't be master his things in such a way that it's going to be pro game in the other person's rishus. And Misha Kibela, however, once the person accepts them, it says, okay, fine, I'll keep them. So then the guy says, well, you know, I was just kidding. So what he's really trying to do is he's trying to be Marvia Zman. He's trying to, he knows that the problem is once the collapse took place, he is subsequently responsible for moving the things out of the way. And instead of having the hassle, he says to the guy, well, why don't you take care of it? Yeah, you can keep it. So the guy goes ahead, and he hires the crew, and he gets the things, he puts everything into his garage for building something. And then the guy comes along and he says, well, actually, I was just kidding around. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't give away all my building material. So how about if I just pay you for your trouble in moving that away? This guy, this way the guy has saved himself the hassle, and meanwhile, he's gotten responsibility off of his head in terms of the chiyuv. So when he comes back and he says, okay, hey, look at your field test. Well, now I'll pay you for any cost that you incurred in moving it. Vania told it, shall we? Now I'll take it back. And show me, well, at that point, we don't listen to him, and this person has already been coneted, and we don't say that it was assumed that he was sitting around. A similar case would be that somebody hires a person to work for him, working in straw, and then what's the difference again in English? Stubble, straw and stubble. The Amarlo Tainri Kari, and then the guy comes and says, well, give me my money. Amarlo Tolmesha Sita Biskoka, well, why don't you take the things that you worked on today, and you take all the straw, and that'll be your, you cleaned out the straw, very nice, keep the straw, I think the straw's worth whatever it is I owed you. There's no fence here, somebody's working in your field for you. You're going backwards. It takes you so long to ask the question.
So when
you get
over,
yes, it's not talking about a wall. A wall will be, that will be our next, the Mishnah after next. Unfortunately, that's in the next Mishnah.
Yeah.
But that's, we're actually leading into the next Mishnah here. So that's that. By the way, I just wanted to mention to everybody, I want to start Bava Batra tomorrow, finish Bava Matiya today, not going to leave, you know, a few lines for the scene, but because I won't be here, I'm home anyway over the weekend, I wanted to make sure that I start adopting. So we'll just be a few lines ahead, basically. There's only a few lines to complete.
So in Shomimlo, he cannot force the person, a po'el, since over here
the Torah gave special tzivuyim, and he included in the issue of bal talin, and you're not allowed to leave the sechar by you, you have to pay him the money, the value in the cash, unless you agree specifically otherwise. In other words, if you would damage someone, you could have said, I'll pay you in straw. But if you hire someone, included in the field of saying to it that he gets his money out immediately, is also the understanding that you're not going to pay him in straw, you're going to pay him in cash. Therefore, you can't force the man to accept straw, even though the straw may have the same value as his salary, you cannot force him to accept straw for money. Nishiki Be'ala, once the Po'el has agreed to accept it, and then the man says, Vama lo'elach v'archa, why don't you take your cash, Vani atola shali, I prefer the straw, in Shomimlo, at that point, we don't listen to him, because he's already been called. Now, tomorrow we'll discuss what the point of having both of these cases. But I says the Gemara, Nifkata, here too, we have a machlokas about what the shiur is. Remember that in the previous version, the previous sermon, when we were talking about residential property, when the roof collapses under the second story, under the second story collapses, we had a machlokas for Rav Shmuel, what is the extent of the collapse? Is it that you had most of it collapse, or is it that even a small area collapsed that he doesn't want now to go downstairs and have to use that area? And here we have the same question. This question of the collapse of the roof, which caused the man's garden on top to fall in, what shiur defines the collapse? Rav amar b'ruba, u'shmuel omer b'arba. Rav says it means it's mostly collapsed. Shmuel says even if you have simply
four by four, it's also sufficient. Rav Amar Barupa. Rav says, well, you need to have most of it collapse, because if you don't, then basically all that happens is that a little bit of the area is going to be used downstairs. We should say Arba'a, by the way, four tefachim, not Arba, which is feminine, which would mean four amot, and the is four tefachim, as we saw before. At least that's the way the Rosh Hashanah learns it. Not everybody agrees to this, because over here we're talking about an area for planting and so on. So it may indeed be Arba Amot. There are even some who learned in the previous Sugiyas Arba Amot. But the question over here is really, in principle, the question is that according to Rav, Adam Zoreh Ketzir Mamata V'Ketzir Lamala, Rav says, what's your problem? If some of the ground has fallen down to the bottom. Okay, so to work that area, you plant your tomatoes downstairs to go in downstairs. And Shmuel Amar B'Arba, once a significant area, that would be 4 by 4 tefachim, Ein Adam Zoreh Ketzir Lamata V'Ketzir Lamala, once it's collapsed, you can't tell the guy, well, for to work that area, take a ladder down and work underneath. At that point, you can already go down into his resource and use it completely. The Tzricha, we need both examples of this idea. Because apparently the machlokas of Rav Shmuel I could have figured out on my own should be applicable both here and to the previous case of the residential property, right? This is more, no, not necessarily. Because the Yashmin and Virah, if I would have been told the earlier Mishnah about residents, and there I would have seen the machlokas of Rav Shmuel, I would have said, Bahaka Omar Shmuel, Mishum de lo avide inshida direct portehaka or portehaka. The reason that Shmuel was mocked there is because people in general would not accept that type of living arrangement, and therefore we understand that the agreement to rent it out to him is an agreement that he can have things on one floor and not go down with his ladder every time he wants to use his soap. When you're talking about planting, in agriculture, people often move around from place to place. You have a small shelf area that's a terrace, a small terrace that you'll work on. So essentially, maybe Shmuel would have agreed over here that for all intents and purposes, we can view the lower part that's underneath the collapsed area as a terrace. He's working a terrace. And maybe over there you can't say that, well, no, you can move into his area. Maybe he would agree to Rav that you work the upper garden, and then for that patch, you go downstairs in a line. And you eat Mar Bahaf on the other hand. If he would have told me only this case of the agriculture, I would have said, okay, that's why Rav says that it's okay to force the guy to go upstairs and downstairs to do this planting. When it comes to residence, maybe he would agree to Shmuel that it's understood that a residence is supposed to be on one level without needing to take ladders down. Therefore, Tzricha, we need both examples. Now, it says in the Mishnah, if you gave him time, but it doesn't say how much that time is. The kama zman beitin. What is the standard time that a court order gives you to respond? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, 30 yom. A standard court order is 30 days, and therefore, as Tosfos points out, this is also the basis of all the other things that we talk about court orders. Court orders to pay off your debts, or the din that we had before about utilizing a mashkon to collect if it's after 30 days, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. And all over that we find the auctions and things like that, always 30 days is a standard court, which is true still today. So unless it's otherwise, usually you have 30 days for responding or fulfilling. Mishayat Kotelo. Now, then we get into the case of the gardener who suddenly finds his garden invaded by the man next door at his phone. Now, what exactly is the case over here? Is the stones lying, so the tree lying in the middle of this rabbit still, or what? I mean, the next case where he talks to the gardener and he tells the garden owner, here's your expenses that you incurred in hauling away the stones, and now I'll take them, please. So the implication is clearly Miklal de Panino. We're talking about a case where the man had removed the stones. I mean, that seems, the Mishnah seems to take for granted that either the owner, in the case of the Rosh Hashanah, or the garden owner, in the case where it fell into the garden, had removed the stones. And we're only talking now about the immediate impact of the fall, right? So time, in which case we would have to concern ourselves with the question of that time of the panino. It seems to be that we're only saying that it's true that he can who can not get his finger back because de tamino, only because of the fact that the man had already moved them away. Hello, tamino, lo. Had he not moved them away, and then the man simply changes his mind, and I would say, lo, in that case, he can change his mind. Am I? Is it not in the gardener's garden? So, tikkun lo sadehu. Why isn't his rishut kona for him? Yom Rav Yezreel Ramina, chatzeiro shel adam, konelo shelo midaato. Initially, as soon as it fell into the guy's garden, it should have automatically been kona for him. Because, as we saw earlier, a chatzer, as long as it's a chatzer mishtamer, can be kona even without the person's specific intent to be kona. Yeah, that's all very nice for the point of view of the one who's in kona. But a hanimili after the kamechavim not in the elay. This is only where the owner desires him to be kona. The point that the Mishnah is making is that the man is playing games over here. He's trying to get out of being sued. So he tells the person next door, why don't you just keep it and take care of it? So you get him off my head, and then 2 days later he'll come back and he'll take it from. But once he sees the crew all there is there, they're hauling things away, if at that point he doesn't respond, and say, oh, wait a minute, I wasn't really serious. And he doesn't say that. Then at that point he can be gone in. But ain't no tsunami. Before, we do have an understanding that a person generally wouldn't be serious about being master of all of his things. And then the next case, where we have a tochela, a sotim, a betel, isn't that exactly the same case? Why do we need one case that has to do with the collapse, and the other case that has to do with the work? Let's read it. We need both cases. You see, because Yeshmina Lahaskamaita, in the first case where the wall collapsed into the garden, that maybe the reason that when he says to him, well, you can have it. And obviously we can't force him on him, the Mishnah thing, but that's because why should I? I mean, after all, I don't owe you anything. I haven't worked for you. There's nothing between us except the fact that your stones collapsed in my garden. Avol Hako, but here I owe the man money. Therefore, when I say yucha, it may well be understood that at that point the person has in dot to take anyway. Mishum, we would say maybe shomim lo damish, because people say there's a common saying that says mimay reshvatech pari ifra. From someone who owes you money, take bran if you have to. If the guy is paying you, take what you can get. Because who knows, you don't take this, they'll say, no, I take only cash. You'll never see the guy again. So it makes much more sense to get what you can out of the situation than to stick on the formality. Therefore, I might think that the truth is that Poel says to himself, well, Lamaisa, I'm certainly going to keep this thing. If the guy doesn't come back, give me something better. So when he's paying, give me something better. So over there, we would say, well, but really, he was going. And therefore, in a sense, it would be Shomimlo. On the other hand, he has been in Halka. Halka Shemesh Kibela Vein Shomimlo. We should be Sveyagor Gabriel. On the other hand, suppose we would only know this case. I would say, in the case of the Poel, but of course, the reason that once he's Makabal and he can't get it back is because the man actually owed him the money. I mean, so it makes sense that it was a true Kenyan. Clean cut, I give it to you because I owe you money. You accept it. Now I've changed my mind. I want to pay you tax so I can get the straw. Well, why should we listen to you? But in the other case, over there in the first case, we should assume that the entire thing was just a farce. And he was even willing maybe to let the guy haul it away and then come back and say, well, obviously I didn't mean to give it to you. Yeah, I'll pay you. I'll pay you for your expenses. So maybe Shomimlo. Therefore, we need to know that even in that case, once he sees them hauling it away, we wouldn't have let the farce go on after the talk. Then the Mishnah continues on. Here it says in the Mishnah, Ein Shomimlo. The problem is that we have a price that it says in the case of the worker, that if you say to a worker, take what it is that you work on, and let that be the money I owe you, Shomimlo. Now, how do we explain that? From the Nachman Lokashi, actually, it's not such a problem. In a case where somebody hires a person to work in another person's field, so over there, he, in fact, he can force them to take it.
Now, we'll see what this is talking about, because it certainly doesn't add up on the surface.
I'm going to rub out a little bit of math. Now, wait a second. What's your logic over here? B'shalom ma'itayma, what is the reason that when it's in his own reshut, we make the guy pay up? It's because the Amalei are no longer. You owe him to get money. And the Torah says you can't pay a salary by giving him bran or straw. You have to give him cash. But if so, what's the difference if you hire him to work in the next door neighbor's field? Bishol Kaviro, or Olan Adnani? He also is the one having hired him who's responsible to pay. And as we've seen before on numerous occasions, somebody hires a guy to work for him, Bishol Kaviro, and actually puts it to work in another guy's field, he has to pay him because he hired him. And then then he can take the money from his friend. The guy says, I never asked you to hire anybody. So, okay, you could at least get the hanah that accrued to that person what he would have had now in additional value in his property because of your work. But it's certainly your responsibility, whether you're going to be repaid or not, to take care of a guy that you hired.
That's true, says Reb Nachman.
Hello, I'm Reb Nachman. All right, I'll give you another explanation. Lo kasha, kan bishalo, kan bishalo hefker. Let's say if I hired somebody to work in a field of hefker, so over there we would, as the Brisa says, listen to him if he wants to pay him up with the things that he works in. Okay, now, the svara over here is because Reb Nachman Shita is, as we saw early on in the Masechta, that if somebody picks up a metziah for a friend, that friend is not pona the metziah with your picking it up for him. Since this is hefker, the guy can simply kind of, well, everything that you worked on and picking up all of this straw really was not for me because I haven't been pona it at all. So in this case, essentially, you took everything for yourself. And therefore, I would say, as the Brisa says, let him keep it. Es rova gender nachman. Es ve rova nachman. Nachman mitziat poel la'atzmo eimatai. Is my shamar lo balabai nafesh ni ayon. Oh, I adore ni ayon. Avli mamar atei ni ayon malaka mitziat poel la'alabai. Now hold on a sec. That's all very nice that somebody else that you say, you're walking along, you ask the guy, did you pick that up for me? And then the guy picks it up and he says, actually, I think I'll keep it myself. Remember that, Mark Locus? There are not machita was over there. Well, the man who asked him to pick it up, not his, because picking it up for him is not yours. But here we're talking about someone you hired. And here it says the Pharisee of Brisa. So once you hire somebody, then that, unless you limited the hiring to a specific task, if that person goes out and picks up something, by definition he picks it up for you, because he is an extension of you for the day. If you simply hire him to be a per diem worker, whatever I tell you to do. So then, in this case, where I hired you specifically to pick up the metziah, obviously you would be gone for me. Don't compare this to the Rabbi Shita about the metziah. Having been koneh for me, he's working for me. And again, I'm responsible for his sakar. We're back to the same problem. So why does the bride say, I can say, well, keep the straw and I won't owe you anything? That doesn't make sense.
Well, that's true too, says Reb Nachman. All right, I got a better idea.
El Amar Reb Nachman, you know what? You're right, if you picked it up. Suppose you only hired the guy to keep an eye on it. So you say, okay, look, here is a whole forest filled with blueberries. Now I want you to keep an eye on this stuff for me. Can you be shomer it for me? Now in that case, he wasn't magdia anything that I could say that he was kone it for me. And he wasn't working in my reshut at all. And so therefore, if he's bahabata, if he's simply sitting there looking at it, so we could say both cases are talking about cases of hefker. If we're talking about our Mishnah, where he told him to pick the blueberries, if he picks the blueberries, then he picked it for the one who hired him, and therefore he did work for that person, and therefore he has to be, he cannot be paid with blueberries, he has to be paid in cash. By changing the price of it first, you can tell him, well, you can keep the blueberries. Over there, he can say, look, you haven't yet been zolfin anything for me, so you can be zolfin it for yourself. That, says Rava, when it comes to the question of habata, that is actually a machlokas, whether if on something that is hefker, you went ahead and you were watching it, whether in that case actually there was a kinyan. Tanoi, where would this machlokas be? Ditznam shomreis tefichei shevi'it, notlin secharan mitrumat halishka. We have a problem over here. We have to bring a carbon minchasa omer, which is brought from Sa'orim. And we have to bring a shtayalecha manshkuris. And that has to be brought from the tzibur. And in the case of Shemitah, we've got a little bit of a problem because we want to be able to have that grain growing until the time that it's ready to be cut the night before in order to bring to the omer. But we've got a problem in that if somebody is okay in it, then it becomes his personal thing, and it needs to be from the tzibur, and it's Shemitah. So what are we supposed to do? We can't be put up a fence around the field. It's supposed to be mufkar. We're gonna not be mafkar, then we're going to be offering it because of Shemitah. So what do we do over there? We hire people to sit there and to watch it, to let people know that it belongs to, it's meant for Hedrus, that we'll see whether it actually belongs to, it's just meant. And we pay them out of the Trumat HaLishka funds, which were donated in order to bring Korbanot HaTzibur from. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, no, you don't pay them. HaRotzeh mitnadehu v'shomer kinyan. If somebody wants to help out, he can volunteer and be a shomer kinyan on it. And the Chachamim said, well, that's the case. Amru lo atah omer kein. If you're going to say that, it will turn out that ein ba'im mishal tzibur. They will not then be a carbon tzibur properly. Now, what is this machlokas? I'll explain to you, this machlokas is precisely the issue that you just raised. If somebody is watching something, a tester, which is the case of Shemitah, does the watching itself allow a kinyan to take place? And I say, my love, the Hakam yesterday, they are undoubtedly, Rav Yossi and the Tanakhama are undoubtedly arguing in the following. The Tanakhama would hold, Habatanda Hefker Kodim, that just the looking at it with the desire to take it for yourself already makes it yours, if indeed it's Hefker. In which case, we've got a problem, because unless we're hiring the guy to work for us as the Tzibur, unless he's working for Hegdash, he is going to end up being Konet for himself. And then you'll say, okay, fine, but he's going to give it to Hegdash. I mean, he's a volunteer. He's not a volunteer to hurt Hegdash. You're right. However, the problem is volunteers like recognition. You see, so what he really wants to do is, he wants to be Zoka in this for himself, and give it to the Tzibur as his donation. But the problem is that a donation for a Shliach, for something that is meant to be a carbon Tzibur, we don't trust. Because people that donate things like to hold on to some level of control. And so we say, therefore, that Shema lo yimserin yafeh yafeh. Maybe this is really completely incorrect. He wants his private thing to be brought as a carbon for the Tzibur. That's not a kosher carbon. That's the Tzibur thing that's brought. There's a lot of insight here into the donor relationship. So, exactly. So therefore, I say like this. The Tanakhama is saying, since he could be Kona himself, we can't let him be watching it unless we're going to pay him. Therefore, Yadli Agraim, if we're going to pay him, then things work out fine. But Yilolo, if we don't pay him, he's going to end up taking it himself and then giving it to us. We don't want that. Rabbi Yossi says, doesn't matter. Because Habatabe after Lo Koni. Anyway, being shamed is not a king. Vichy Yadli Tiburu Maisi. So now, when Hegdash sends out people to cut it for the carbon, at that point, and only at that point, that they're going to be zoch in it. So therefore, has to the kazoki bit. And then what is the meaning of what omer achi? And if you say that, it's going to end up that it doesn't belong to the tzibur. Well, what did they mean to say? I mean, Rabbi Yossi holds that he wouldn't be konet, so why wouldn't it belong to the tzibur? I mean, what's their sign? No. Achi kama means they're saying, if we take your assumption that we don't pay the man, in terms of our assumption that habata is konet, so no, midvarecha lidvareinu, according to the way you're saying that we don't pay him, but with our understanding of the halakha that habata itself is konet b'shel hefker, put the two together and ain omer b'shel hefker b'shel tzibur. It turns out you're not bringing the payros that you were watching from the tzibur, you're bringing it from a yadid, and therefore we don't allow this type of arrangement. Says Rava, well, I'll tell you, it's an interesting explanation of the machloket. Is this an earlier tape here?
You're not coming back? I was attending to work this morning. I was doing some labor with you.
My Rava, well, it's an interesting explanation, but there's absolutely no reason for us to assume that that's what they're arguing in. I could say that actually everybody agrees that Habatah after Kani, and there's no question that just being Shemeret for Shemitah would be enough for the Akinyan. The Machlokas here may simply be as to whether we're concerned about the fact that an individual who owes something is not going to properly give it over to the Tzibur. Maybe that's the Machlokas. Maybe the point is, the Machlokas of Yossi and the Tanna Kamma is Gufa in the question of whether a donor is going to really be a donor or whether he intends to maintain some kind of personal control. The Rabbanan holds, look, you got to pay the guy. Because if you don't pay the guy, he's going to end up essentially being cornered for himself, and then we don't trust him giving over to the Tzibur. And whereas Rav Yossi says, why pay the guy? There's plenty of volunteers, and therefore, what's your problem? It'll be koned, the habatah, the act of shmirah. So what? Let him be koned. He's bringing it for us anyway, so who cares? So the, and according to this explanation, ma ata omer, achi, what then is the meaning of the word, and you say so? What is wrong with what he's saying? If there's no kashash of shem aloyim shem yafayata, the meaning of it is that midvarecha lidvareinu, the way that you are learning that we will not pay him, according to us who hold that there is a chash of shem aloyim shem yafayata, the kashin of shem aloyim shem yafayata, it would turn out if we would listen to you that ain't on river shalach and bari michel tibor, since we are koshi that he won't properly give it over. But then it turns out that the omer and the shalach are not being properly brought. Or there's yet a third possibility. This is an ikadi amri and what Rava suggested. Ikadi amri, Rava omar, Rava said, no, the machlokas is like this. It may well be the kulei alma abatav after lo kani. Maybe everybody agreed that you wouldn't be koned simply by looking at it. What therefore is the problem? The machlokas over here is a totally different issue. It has to do with the psychology of people who elbow their way in where they don't belong. People who are strong arm tactics. So now our problem over here is we want to make sure that nobody's going to walk off with this stuff. It belongs to no one, technically, to the Shemitah. So what's going to prevent somebody from coming in and saying, well, what lovely Torim, or what lovely Shemitah. And the watchman is empowered about as much as an Israeli policeman is empowered against an Arab. You could argue with him. Well, it's really meant for Hegdish. You wouldn't want to take it from Hegdish, would you? And the guy says, well, no, it doesn't belong to Hegdish. Now, does it? Now, get out of the way. But what I would hire to watch, I said, get out of the way. So what's he going to do to this problem? Masha Enkei, if we spread around the word that this man is being paid by Hegdish, then the popular perception will be, even though it's not true, that if Hegdish is paying him, then it actually belongs to them. And then, if they don't want to take something, I want to be over on the ister of using Hegdish's thing. So this whole thing is a ploy, actually, what the Rabbanan are doing. And therefore, the Tanna Kamma of the Sakino Rabbanan Lamesavay Arba Zuzi, Yecha Deli Shame Bali Zroot Velikashuminayim. The Tanna Kamma holds this is the Sakino Rabbanan. And the Rabbanan said, give him a couple of them, 2 bits, 4 bits, in order that people should hear that he's being paid and therefore not come to take it. Whereas Rav Yossi said, well, that's a king. Rav Yossi says, that doesn't bother us. Now, this is already a problem, because then the Ata Omer Halki doesn't make any sense. Because now it turns out that everybody is Moda, that there's no problem, right? It certainly is not going to belong to a Yachid. It's only going to belong to the Tzibur when and if they pick it. So how could they possibly say to a Yachid, oh, according to you, it's not going to be coming from Michel Tzibur? What are you talking about? No Hashash Michel Tzibur. The most you could say is, according to you, someone will come and steal it away. But that's not what they said. So this is really a problem in this last explanation of Rav. And here, in Ma'at HaOmer, what they were saying is like this. Yidvarecha lidvareinu,
Ein, now notice we don't say anymore Ein ha shtelach and ma'omer. No, no, because there's no use to shtelach and ma'omer. The problem is that according to you, if we're going to take the money, which was the 4 bits that we were supposed to pay them from the Trumas Halishka, and this guy is a volunteer, so now it turns out that there are 4 bits in the Trumas Halishka that are his. Because he said, okay, my money, leave it in the Trumas Halishka. But the problem is the Trumas Halishka is not supposed to have money in it that belongs to a Yachid. Now if we take that money and we buy Tzvinim Umutzokim, forget about buying the Shtelach and the Omer. There's no problem with the Shtelach and the Omer. They're coming directly from the free things. So we're not going to pay for them. But when we turn around now tomorrow and we pay for our Karbonis, for the Musaf on Pesach, who's going to be paying for that? This guy! Because he was such a fine citizen as to be Mochel on the money that was owed him from the Trumas Halishka. Therefore, Taina the Rabbanus Rav Yossi, assuming that we would do what you say, which is to allow volunteerism, we would end up with the money that was miyuchad for the volunteers belonging to an individual in the middle of the Trumas Halishka, and then we would use it, it wouldn't belong to the Tzibur. V'chein ki yotze Ravin, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ravin came, he said Rav Yochanan indeed explained it, the sugya exactly like that, that it was the way the second shot in Rava, Hoshishim Lebaalei Zro'oti Kabinai, but everybody agrees that you cannot be Kone Ba'avata, and in fact this is how we pass you. Hamotzi Zevel, the Rishut HaRavin. Now we get back again to the question of the issue of responsibility for the collapses, or in this case, for building or doing other things in Yisroel Yisroel. We're bringing this Mishnah in, even though we had this Mishnah term from the Zikin before, we're bringing it in terms of the problem of building Yisroel Yisroel. Because very often when you do have a collapse of the type that we've discussed, or where you want to go ahead and rebuild, or you want to even initially build, and you're building something right up against the Rishus HaRabim, it would be like here in the Rova, where are you going to put the building material? Mm-hmm. And that's the problem all the time. When you probably go past the street, there's absolutely nowhere to put anything. You've got to put it next to the house in order to be able to bring in the flooring and so on. So all of these questions now we want to discuss in the context of the collapses that we've had here. So Amoti Zevel Rishut HaRabim, somebody who is moving out his composting, his Rishut HaRabim, Amoti Motiva Mezabel Mezabel. Now what you got to do is, you could take it out the door, but you got somebody right there that's going to pick it up immediately and haul it away. You can't leave it there. Ein Shorin Kit Rishut HaRabim. You cannot leave now. There's certain types of teeth, which is that clay-like earth that is used to make bricks with, and sometimes that was left sitting in water for a very long time in order to get it properly wet so that there wouldn't be spots that didn't mix properly, and that took time. You don't leave that out in Israeli. They ain't love neem living, nor can you put them into the forms for the bricks, because again, over there, it's going to take time to dry, and things that take time, we don't do in Rishut HaRabim. HaBoneh Rishut HaRabim, if you have to build in Rishut HaRabim, HaMevi Avanim Mevi, the transport of the building materials, brings them, HaBoneh Boneh, and then the guy takes them directly as they're brought, puts them into place. V'im Hizik, Mishalei Mashizik. If anything happens, even during that brief period, he's still responsible, even though we're giving you the right to bring it and to transport it, but we're not giving you the right to get away without being responsible. There's two elements over here that he's arguing. First of all, you'll notice that he says, even means about what you just said. Not only is what you just said wrong, that he's not responsible. No, you're claiming he is responsible? He's not responsible. But it's even for 30 days, not 10 minutes. When somebody needs to build, they're given 30 days to have building materials outside of the area that they need to build. And during that time, they are not responsible for what happens. So there's two issues. How long you have a right to leave it there, and whether if there's damage during that period, whether you would be responsible for it. Lema Matis in the local Rabbi Yehuda, now certainly our Mishnah seems not to be following the Rabbi Yehuda Shita. The Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bisha'ato Sa'at Zivalim, Adamotizi Blo Rishut HaRabim, Mitzavro Kotro Shemion, Kidei Shiei Nishot Ragle Adam, Uvragle Behema, Shamanat Kenin, Kudio Shuali Yisrael Atayas, Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda tells us that at the time of the Chalukat HaAretz by Yehoshua, he included a condition that it would be permissible for people to empty out their homes in this way, leave the Zevel out in order for cars to keep running over it and so on, so that it should be properly mixed and it should have good compost. And even though this is not Mikra Din, it was a condition. And based on that condition, everybody took their chelik and Eretz Yisrael. So, I mean, what could the Mishnah possibly be meaning according to him? You hear it say how much you have over, you could set it down and then haul it away immediately, and then you're high. Anyway, even in that brief period. So none of this makes sense. Now, the truth is, your immediate response would be, of course, that all Rabbi Yehuda said was, B'sha'at Hotza'at Zivalim. So he said, I mean, who's to say that our Mishnah was talking about B'sha'at Hotza'at Zivalim? Right? I mean, maybe our Mishnah is talking about Shalom B'sha'at Hotza'at Zivalim, in which case Rabbi Yehuda would agree. And why make it a machloket? Why say it's not going like Rabbi Yehuda? So one approach it does this is that indeed the Mishnah must be talking about B'sha'at Hotza'at Zivalim, because it says, Hamotzi motzi v'ham mizabel mizabel. I mean, that means now is the time in which we're doing the zibul. So in other words, it's mashmut, but that's the period that we're talking about. So therefore, we can't answer it this way. The other approach that Tosfos has is that the truth is that on the contrary, the Mishnah is certainly talking about where it's not the shato ta'atavamim. And that explains, says Tosfos, why we didn't simply ask from the fact that the Mishnah says Hamizabel Mizabel instantly, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, he has 30 days. There's two issues over here. There's a responsibility issue for the time, and then there's the time that you're allowing it there. Apparently, we're not bothered by this. All that we care about is the question of hetek, as we'll see, because the Gemara now answers a few same Rabbi Yehuda. Mod Rabbi Yehuda, she means the chayav l'shalem. Now, does that answer anything? Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you'd have to pay. But fine, but Rabbi Yehuda said you have 30 days. The Mishnah says you have no time at all. Why doesn't it? The Gemara's not even bothered by that. So Tosfos says that's the point. The Gemara isn't bothered by that because the Gemara understood that it's talking about shalom b'shat tosad v'alim. The reason that it's not going like Rabbi Yehuda is because according to Rabbi Yehuda, you should not be responsible. At least that was our assumption during the brief period that it is allowed to be there. And the Mishnah says, you are responsible, therefore it's not going like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, according to the other pshat in Tosfos that we're talking about, yes, b'shat tosad v'alim. Remember, the difference would be if you hold it shalom b'shat tosad v'alim. So then, the Mishnah is not directly parallel to Rabbi Yehuda's case, which explains why it's not 30 days. And the only issue is whether in the brief period of transferring the Zevel out of your house, whether you're going to be responsible for payment if somebody is slipped on or is hurt, right? If you hold that the Mishnah is talking about B'sha'at Hotza'at Zevelim, then you would assume that Shalom B'sha'at Hotza'at Zevelim, you wouldn't be allowed even to have that brief period. In other words, you want to put the Zevel out there for 10 minutes while the hauler picks it up, the cops will come and they'll give you a fine. But you put your Zevel out, which is forever. It's only for a few minutes. Who cares if it's only for a few minutes? We'll let you out a ticket.
Because it's not between
8
and 10?
Because it's not for Shabbat, it's out of Zevelim. It's a season. Exactly. So therefore, the difference in the Tosfos is also has very important implications. Please, how am I supposed to give over a thousand before? So if we have the two shot in Tosfos, it makes a difference in terms of also, do I have a right to do something very briefly because, I mean, I need to get out of my house. What am I supposed to do? I mean, that's part of the householder's right. I mean, I just want to put it down for a few minutes until the truck arrives. According to the way Tosfos is learning here, that the other shot in Tosfos, that our Mishnah is talking about, that it is B'shat Hotza'at Zevelim, the assumption is because if it weren't B'shat Hotza'at Zevelim, who gave you the right to put it down even for a minute? This is, you know, you always argue with the cop. I just put the car here for a moment. I'm loading. Right? According to that, this would end up being the machlokes between the two Shevin and Tosfos. Is that a taina that I'm only loading? Because that's exactly what's going on over here. But of course, if you hold that the case is talking about our Mishnah, that it's talking about the Sha'at Hotza'at Zevelim, how do you explain the fact that the Gemara didn't ask from the 30 days and was only bothered and was only bothered by the fact that he was saying you're responsible, and the Mishnah Rebbeinu was saying you're not responsible. What happened to the 30-day issue? Says Tosfos, because it does not say in the Mishnah, you mustn't leave it out there for 30 days. It says, you take it out and the guy hauls it away. Maybe that's just giving you a good answer, because if you don't do it that way, you're going to be responsible for anything that happens during the course of the time that it's out there. That's all it's saying, perhaps. It doesn't say usher, it says anal motzi. It says demotzi and let the guy haul it away. So maybe it's a tovarka mashman, as we'll see actually in the Gemara possibility that that's the shot in the Mishnah. Therefore, says the Gemara now, the Mishnah may well be going according to Rabbi Yudah. When Rabbi Yudah said you can put it out for 30 days, he never said you don't have to pay, did he? If anything is damaged, maybe you do have to pay. But it's not. Motor Rabbi Yudah. Yeah. But not Motor Rabbi Yudah Benir Kanakashu Patur. And what about Rabbi Yudah's famous fact that if you have your Ner Chanukah outside in Rishut HaRabim and you're a store owner and a guy comes walking by with his overloaded donkey and so on, it turns out that he gets it on fire by passing over your putter. Why? He says, Nipnei Shuoseb Rishut. Because you had permission to do that. Now, doesn't that mean my lavra should be in? Because the courts granted you permission, they're not going to make you pay for something that they tell you you're allowed to do. So if that's the case, then if over here we're talking about Peshato Tassus of Alin, and you're allowed to take out this Zevel, then apparently Rabbi Yudah would say you don't have to pay, and therefore the Mishnah cannot be going like Rabbi Yudah because it exists. You do have to pay.
Okay? Because you're allowed to do it. If you're allowed to do it, you shouldn't have to pay.
Says the Gemara, no. Rabbi Yudah does not mean because the court gave you the right to put out a Ner Chanukah. It means because you have the Rishut of the Mitzvah. Big difference between them. Rishut of the Mitzvah means where you have a chiyuv to do something, we're not going to be chiyuv of you if it causes damage. But where we give you the rights, maybe the rights are coupled with responsibility. Not a very modern idea, but it's possible that in the old days, maybe that's the way it was. Yes, so it must be, therefore, that according to Rabbi Yudah, it would be fired.
No,
it's not true, because the price of the fair is not like that. But Tanya, call Elu Shamru Mutarim Lekakel Bershut HaRabim. In all of the cases where we gave you a right to do something because it was necessary for you, and you can even cause a problem in Rishut HaRabim, even though we allow you to do it, Imi Zik Chayav L'Shalem, you better have a good insurance policy, because you're going to pay for any damages that occur. But Rabbi Yehuda puts out. Rabbi Yehuda says, look, if the court allows you to use it, it means that this is an extension of your rights as a householder. Now, if it's an extension of your rights, then it means that the people who are robbing have to take care not to be damaged, not vice versa, and therefore you would be put there. Our mission that says you're chayav on taking your garbage out, obviously, can't be going according to Rabbi Yehuda.
Says the Gemara, you're right. We better go back the way we said it before. It's better to admit that Masnis and the Lok Rabbi Yehuda, our Mishnah is indeed not going like Rabbi Yehuda. Omer Abaye, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and Rabbi Shimon. Actually, we have three major shittos in this direction that wherever the court is giving you a right to do something, they don't couple it with your right, with anyone else's right to be sued, to sue you rather. You cannot be sued for doing something which you were allowed to do. Rabbi Yehuda holds this. We just saw that. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel holds this. We just saw that in our Mishnah. This one, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, af nitakenu et malachto, lifnei 30 yom. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, you could even put your stuff out there 30 days before. And he doesn't say you can put your stuff there. Even. Which means, forget about your saying he's responsible for what happened in the 2 minutes. Even if it was out there for 30 days, he wouldn't be responsible. So in other words, he's arguing also on the issue of responsibility. Which case he's agreeing with Rabbi Yehuda that you're not responsible once you have permission. And the third shita is Rabbi Shimon's shita. It's not. Ayamamidova Aliyah. Somebody who is putting in an oven on a second story. He has to be careful that he has a very strong and thick layer of flooring, which is the guy underneath roof, before he puts an oven there, which is going to heat and perhaps cause a fire on the roof beams underneath. So if he's putting up a tanur, you need at least 3 tefachim of plaster underneath it. So there you've got a full foot of plaster that will protect the beams underneath. Ubikirab, you're just putting up a stovetop, you need a full tefach of plaster. Mean he's weak, but if anything happens and it does cause a fire, Mishalayim Mishizik, still your responsibility. Because Rabbi Shimon says, no. Lo amru kol ha-shiurim alalo elashim mishizik patur Mishalayim. On the contrary, the purpose of our giving these values are to tell you that this is considered to be prudent, and if anyway something happens, it's viewed as an accident, and therefore you're puppet. Here we're talking about a case of a kablanut group that consists of various individuals, each one doing their own thing. They've all gotten together to be able to build this building for you. And so it starts with the man who goes in to hack out the stone from the quarry. So he's the chatzav. Okay, the chatzav works on the stone. While he's working on the stone, he damages either the stone or he damages somebody with a splinter or something. Since it's in his hands at that moment, he is responsible. When he hands it over to the satap is the guy who now evens out the stone. Those are the guys that work out there in the street, and they're sitting there for 20 minutes on each stone, the full screwdriver. So he gives it to the satap. The satap now becomes chayav if he caused damage to the stone or to anybody else. The satap hands it over to the truck driver. At that point, v'achamar chayav, the truck driver is chayav for any damages. And the truck driver hands it over to the sabal to carry it to the building place. Hakamar shemasar lekatav. At that point, hakatav chayav. Now it's the sabal who is going to be responsible. Hakatav shemasar lebanai. Now the katav, the sabal, hands it over to the guy who's doing the built bricklaying. So he hands it over to him. At that point, if the banai causes damage, the banai is responsible. The banai then hands over to the job to the adrikal, which is the modern Hebrew for architect, which at that time meant the master bricklayer. You'll notice, however, that Rashi, in defining adrikal, calls him the avi ha'umanim. Now, avi ha'umanim is the translation of architecta, right? So the architect became the adrikal. It was perfect. So in terms of the one responsible for the project, for the engineering, and so on, it's overall the responsibility of the adrikal. In the Gemara, it means the guy who makes sure with a plumb line that everything is precisely the way it was supposed to be, which is similar ultimately to the engineer who does the last check, puts things into place. If he causes damage at that point by knocking on a brick in order to get it into place for a stone or whatever, then he would be fired. The Ininiyas Eden al Hadimus, the Zika, if the layer was completed, now everybody goes out for a lunch break, some guy walks by and one of the stones falls out and hits him on the head, at that point, kulam chayavim mishaleh, they are all responsible. But the Brisa says, Acharon Chayav, the Kulam Pturim. The Brisa is only the last guy to handle the stone. It's his responsibility. Why is the whole group responsible? No kasha. Kan b'tzilut, kan b'kablanut. The case of the Brisa is talking about where you had hired each person with your own kablan. Always a big mistake. So when you were your own kablan, then the last guy you're going to have to go after. Over here we're talking about a kablanut group. It's a contractor that consists of a group of people that have gotten together with different talents and have formed now a group of nowadays. So, okay, so now the group as a whole has accepted responsibility for the contract, and therefore, once it's in place and everybody's done their job, they are all equally responsible for damages that are caused.